You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hello and welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. It's Tuesday, December 14th, 2021. I'm Maggie Lake here with Thomas Thornton, the founder of Hedge Fund Telemetry. Tommy, great to see you.
You call me Thomas. That's good. My mom.
I felt like serious
Thomas.
Today. Yeah.
Okay. I'm very serious today. No jokes.
But it does kind of feel a little bit like that for some people watching the market, because it kind of feels like everyone's waiting for some shoe to drop, right? We had another hot inflation reading, PPI, which measures inflation at the wholesale level, up 9.6 year over year. I think that was a record annual increase coming on day one of the Fed meeting that everyone's been waiting for. And we saw tech stocks get hit again today. 10-year Treasury creeping a little higher. It's still holding pretty steady though, around 1.43, 1.44%. But what do you make of that sell-off in technology?
Okay, well, it was just bound to happen because we've been seeing we've had this these five stocks leading the market higher. And let me see if I can remember them all. It's, of course, Apple, Microsoft, NVIDIA, Tesla, Google. Did I miss one? So those, according to David Kostin at Goldman Sachs, represent 51% of the total return, just five stocks in the S&P this year. It's much higher than the NDX, obviously, because that's what the NDX is. Mm. But I've been getting some DeMarc indications or some signals, exhaustion signals, and I run several custom charts with indices. So I have one with Apple and Microsoft alone. And yesterday we had some upside exhaustion signals, and lo and behold, they reversed. That's what they're supposed to do, and they do it quite often. Sometimes they don't, and when they don't, it's actually a good sign that the trend is going to continue. But right now, I think that we have, a very hot inflation number with the PPI, which those are what the producers are paying for goods and materials that they're going to have to pass through to whoever's buying them through the retailers. And that's going to be a trick. To me, inflation's here. I think Jay Powell saying it's not transitory, or they retired that term. Yeah, you're right, Jay. It's not transitory, but it's going to be a little bit more evident going into the next couple months of what's happening. And it's going to, that PPI, I think, is going to hit margins and earnings, corporate earnings, a little harder in Q1.
Yeah. And do you think that because they're not going to be able to pass it along, or it's just the entire thing, even if they can pass some along? I mean, some of these increases we've seen, and by the way, this coming, so this lags a little bit, we know, but we know already that, China shuts some factories in an area where we're still dealing with these variants. So it kind of drags out that whole supply chain issue, doesn't it?
Yeah, it actually does. And I think the supply chain is going to take a while. I think everybody's been saying that. And what I worry about going into, maybe mid 2022 is that demand's going to start to decline. Yeah. Because prices go up and then the consumer says, I'm not going to go out to dinner. I'm not going to buy that item. I'm going to hold back because I can't afford it. Then you're going to start to see the commodity prices and other inflationary issues start to come down. So that may be mid 2022. I'm working on my year of 2022, all the predictions, and I have it in my little book here.
Oh, I love it. We're gonna have to get
I need to get done, book. But probably won't. You see that? So I'm working on it.
Awesome. Well, we definitely want to hear about that when you get it done. Let's go back to some of those tech names you were looking. So we know we're talking about the supply chain. We know Apple's had some issues with some, you know, some of the every, you know, many, especially companies who have consumer facing products. But the fact that we're seeing the selling in tech, is it linked to fundamentals? Is it linked to inflation and concerns about higher rates? Or is it the charts telling you something? Have we sort of seen this building for a multitude of reasons, including, you know, the sort of type of people who've been playing in this?
Well, all of the bottom line with Apple is they've come out a few times and they've, I mean, through the Nikkei and other forums where they try to leak out bad news, saying that they're going to have, you know, fewer iPhone sales and the market didn't care. There's been even a story about demand issues that they hit the suppliers in Asia. I have a couple Asia clients who are tech analysts and write in, you know, Ground Zero for technology. And they've said now that the Apple still looks really strong. But I think people are buying the stock because it works. It's easy to understand. It's a great company. They've got a buyback I'm sure that whoever's doing it has their elbow on the buy button, just pegged. And they've got lots of cash. But here's the problem. It's trading well over 30 times earnings, which is historically very, very high. And with all these, you know, $200 priced targets, I think some B of A upgraded them today and put 215 on their price target. That's at 35 times earnings. Yeah. And to me, I think that's just, it's too rich. I'm not going to pay that for Apple. I have a little Apple and some accounts that are long term, but I'm not at all inclined to buy the stock here at this price. It makes no sense. And I think it's ripe for a pullback and a disappointment come earnings.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, because with so many of these big cap, mega cap tech names, so many people are conditioned to buy the dip because it has worked. And, you know, let's not forget, there's nowhere else to go. There isn't anything else.
Tina,
you know, there is no alternative, whatever you want to call it. Is that trade over?
Well, let's remember that the majority, like I mentioned, there are a lot of stocks down significantly from their highs. And I'm looking, I can run my screen.
Actually, we should talk about that, because I think, you know, whenever we talk about, and if we want to talk about the S&P broadly, whenever we talk about that, people say we're like, oh, it's trading off. But then everyone turns around and said, well, remember, it's really close to its record high still. So it feels like it's been terrible. But then when we saw that pullback earlier, kind of drifted back up to record highs again. But what do we know? What do we need to know about what's going on underneath the sort of market headline? Does it look different if you move away from just looking at the S&P 500 headline?
Yeah. I'm a stock picker, and this has been a market that's with these mega cap names that have hidden a lot of the underlying weakness in the market. If you look at the Russell, it's near at the low of right there. It's at the low of the range almost for the whole year. And I only have 6 months on there, but that also has a downside DeMarc countdown, a sequential countdown on day six. So what makes me a little concerned here with the Russell is that when you have this countdown, not near 13 and you're near the support levels, this thing could go and break below that 210 level on the Russell. And that gives me a bit of an eerie feeling heading into the end of the year. And my note today was, you know, about you don't need to be a hero. And there's not a lot of people that are on desks managing a pad of a portfolio or a mutual fund or hedge fund. They're saying, hey, let's go out and take a lot of risk right now, mid-December. We've had a good year. Nobody really needs to squeeze another 1% to 2% out if their year's been good. And that's why hedge funds de-risked and took down a lot of exposure in the last month. It's caused a bit of a whip up and down. But hey, shorts have been winning lately. And we were talking about the Goldman Sachs most shorted basket. And this is within their prime brokerage, the stocks that are most shorted. And that's down in the last month, 20%. 20% most shorted. That's pretty good. Down 9% in the last 5 days.
Wow.
So I'm a long short manager. I like to find dispersion, and this has like been great for that environment. It's been fabulous.
Does it look like there's still downside in those names? Like, are you continuing to short those names, or do you feel like that move has happened?
I think what happened recently and at the previous low that we just had, I put out a note saying we're at critical levels, and it was either make or break. And
what are we looking at here? Are we looking at S&P 500? Are we looking at Russell? What's make or break?
It could be really, I mean, you can look at the Russell, the S&P, the NASDAQ, Qs, whatever. Everything was basically at a level where, and sentiment and some DeMarc indicators, everything was at a level where I said, hey, if this goes a little further south, we're in trouble. But we bounced, and many of those indices made lower high bounces, which is a concern. Lower high bounces trap people. And now, like the Russell, I think there are a lot of people that bought that bounce. There was a lot of volume, and now they may start to get underwater.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
You know, I want to come back and talk about some, we have a question. I want to talk about some individual names, but it's interesting that we have to pay attention to the relationship and what's happening here with the inflation, not only in regard to the Fed, but as you mentioned before, in terms of margins. And Chris Alexander spoke with, and this interview is out today, with Steve Clapham about stock performance in an inflationary environment. Let's have a listen to what they had to say.
I believe there's been a high amount of inflation. I know the statistics don't tell you that, but certainly, you know, if I look at my outgoings, things like, so what do I spend money on? I spend money on school fees. School fees have only...
Yeah, you don't have to say anything about that. Everybody knows that.
Health insurance, medical insurance, only gone up.
Same.
House insurance, only... I mean, you know, all the things that I spend a lot of money on, they've all been rising. So, you know, I mean, I think there's been inflation in the system. It just hasn't really come out in the statistics. I think
so if we look forward 2 years, what's your base case?
Well,
for the macro.
I mean, honestly, I'm not in the business of macro forecasting, and I kind of just try and buy stocks that look like they're going to be re-rated. And I don't, you know, I have a macro framework in mind. And so, you know, when I'm looking at stocks, I'm thinking, okay, I don't know whether inflation is going to be 4, 5, 6, 8%. I mean, all of these are plausible.
Yep.
2%, I think, is probably less likely. So what do I want? I want companies which have pricing power, which have got the ability to pass their costs on. And that's the only thing that matters. Because if you don't have pricing power, you're going to get screwed. Your margins are going to fall. And margins start at very, very elevated levels. So you either want a business in which they're not susceptible to those cost pressures, very rare to find any, or you want companies that have pricing power.
You know, it's interesting time. By the way, that full interview is available on Essential Plus and Pro Tiers, and it hit drop today. So check it out. You know, it's interesting, Tommy. I feel like for a while, you know, it was sort of people broadly looking at their strategy. The idea of having to sort of look at the fundamentals of individual companies and decide whether they have pricing power. I don't know that everyone's been doing that due diligence in that same way for a while, because you really haven't had to. Do we need to start doing that more? We should have been doing it all along. We should have been doing it all along. But like, is this going to become much more of an individual stock story as opposed to broad index, broad sector type of story?
Well, Apple, just go back to Apple. Apple's had pretty good pricing power, and they've been able to raise prices moderately over the years, and people keep buying their products. And I think that's, you know, that's one of my favorite pricing power stories out there. He talks about healthcare. Yep, healthcare companies can raise prices because insurance companies will continue to pay, and insurance companies raise prices on the consumer because the consumer has to have it. And so, yeah, I agree. I 100% agree on pricing power.
We have a question from Anthony S. Saying, can you discuss, given the fact that, you know, we look like we're in it, shorts have been winning, we look like we're in an environment where it's going to be a little dicey for stocks. Can you discuss stocks that you'd be looking at in the event of a larger drawdown? I guess we should establish if there is going to be a larger drawdown. Discuss stocks you'd be looking at.
Okay, well, I have a whole portfolio of stocks that I am short. I'm still short DoorDash. I think that one has, talk about no pricing power. That one still has vulnerability on the downside. I'm short Adobe. They report earnings this week. And the stock just fell out of bed, was downgraded, and looks extremely overextended. And they have a similar product in not everything, but Adobe, I think, is a great company. But like DocuSign. And DocuSign came out, whiffed earnings, and the stock was murdered. And that could be possibly something that could happen as well, because Adobe has a bit of a sign online type of fill out your PDF thing. So that could be an issue to watch. And it's so extended out there. And we did have some DeMarc exhaustion 13s on the exact high, and 680.80 is where I am short. I think, you know, look, it's hard to, when you're looking for good shorts in the market, avoid the obvious. And okay, I occasionally will, you know, go for the obvious, and I'm short Tesla, but that's a whole nother story. But you don't want to necessarily short the, you know, the meme stocks here. That just, you can get run over as they bounce and get crazy. You want to be looking for stocks that are breaking down, that have a lot of overhead supply of people that bought higher. That actually is Tesla, and companies that have exhaustion signals and that are overloved, and also companies that don't have a high amount of short interest. And by the way, Tesla does not have a high amount of short interest. It's actually the lowest it's ever been in its history. So that's one of the reasons why I added more to my Tesla short last week. And here's a pro tip. Don't ever talk about Tesla that you're shorting it on Twitter, because people will come out of the woodwork.
They're coming for you. We should call you Teflon Tommy, because honestly, like the fact that you're brave enough to sort of engage at all, because so many people, and especially, I know there was a whole back and forth after he got Time Magazine Person of the Year. We actually have to hold off on talking about Tesla, because that's all we'll end up talking about, because of all the people that love to spar with Tommy about this.
It's a chaos. It is total chaos.
It is. But I applaud you for doing the work to have a two-way conversation about it.
I will mention a couple other things that I've recently started to short. I've started to short some of the home builder indices. I have a monitor that's on this side of my page here, and ITB and XHB, which I'm short. These were the most, the highest above the 50-day moving average of all my ETFs. And I look at how far extended they get above the 50-day, and I can look at historically how far they typically go. And my monitor has all the ones that are high above the 50-day gravitate towards the highs, and on the lows, like for example, OIH oil services is down 8.8% below the 50-day moving average. That was at the top at a point, and we did short that, and now we're out of those shorts. So, look, I think that you can do a lot of good shorting by using technical indicators. Everybody's rolling their eyes. And you don't need to necessarily go to war with the CEO or be an activist to make money. I covered AMD and NVIDIA today, both 12% gains. And those are great companies. Again, overloved, had overhead supply, exhaustion signals breaking down.
Yeah, and you have to pay attention. You have to pay attention. These you don't put these on. You've got to really pay attention to all these signals you're saying. It sounds like it's a shorter, this is a good question, actually. I'm assuming that you have a pretty short term, short time horizon when you're doing this, but we do have When it comes to shorting, how large, small, in terms of positions do you take, and what determines your exit? So how do you know when to get out?
Yeah, this is a really good question. There's times where I like to ride a short from the mark exhaustion 13 on the top to the exhaustion 13 on the bottom, which, by the way, Robinhood has a 13 on the bottom today. And that was my last time I was on. It's down 45%.
You were on, you recommended shorting Robinhood.
Yeah, that one turned out to be extraordinary. And occasionally you get lucky and you really have a great return. I'm a big believer in understanding how to weight your own portfolio. And I weight my largest weighting is 5%. That's it. And I usually will start with 2%, add, if I'm wrong a little bit and I still believe it, I'll add more to get to 5%. Then I use stops. And I'm often wrong. And if I'm wrong, I cover, I move on. That's part of the game. But the sizing is really, really important, and sizing properly based on the asset that you have. You don't want to oversize something when it's really volatile, because it'll cause you, you know, the headaches and indigestion and sleepless nights. You don't need that. You size appropriately for the volatility that the instrument has. And
yeah, I think that's really important.
And as far as covering things, there's a lot of times where I'll look at a shorter term chart and see, maybe look, for example, the NASDAQ today was trying to find a level at on the Qs at 384 and S&P at 460. And both of them had 15-minute time frame to mark 13s. So I looked at it and said, you know what? I don't mind taking some profits here. It's ring the register on stocks that if the market does bounce with the Fed tomorrow or Friday or Thursday and Friday, I think that NVIDIA, AMD are going to rip higher, because that's what people, they'll run to those. And they're oversold a little bit, so that's fine. But I'm just rallying here.
This is really important, because we have a lot of questions about the process. You know, as people, I think, build on their experience, they want a little bit more detail. So this is fantastic. So this, you're talking about how to exit, right? Like when to take the money off the table. This is the hardest question to answer.
You know, the thing that is really hard, and I'll tell you that in our hedge fund, the hedge fund I worked for, there were times where we'd never get the bottom to cover, and we'd never get the top to sell perfectly. And a lot of times it was that it'd go down and then come back up, and we'd have to cover, and it wasn't imperfect. It was an imperfect cover, or something went up and we're long and it came down, and we sold it not at the highs, but we made money. The other thing is, and if anybody everybody on this that's watching this has thought to themselves, what should I do here? What should I do? Should I take this off? Should I buy more? Should I sell? You know, do half. Okay. People always ask me, what do you do? And what should I do with this? And I'm like, well, take half off. If you have, you know, indecision in your head, it's often good to take half off ahead of earnings or a Fed decision or something like that. You can always add back. And we were notorious for constantly turning over our portfolio, trading around positions. So we'd be long something, we'd take profits on the way up, and comes down, we buy more, and vice versa on the short side. And that, I think, is just part of my process that I grew up with. And everyone, especially people that are newer in the market, are going to learn something from people they meet or people they follow throughout their career, and they build their own process. I can't say to myself, you know, oh, I'm Tom Thornton and you have to follow my process.
No, you have to see what your risk, you know, your risk appetite, how much you can elude. You know, everyone's going to be different. They have to evaluate their own personal financial situation. But these are some really good things to think of as you go through and are formulating. And it's funny you say take half, because there is this weird tendency to think you have to do it all. Like sell it all, buy it all, cover it all. You know, like
we all,
I don't know, human beings are programmed like that.
Yeah, if you do it all and then it goes against you, or
you beat yourself up,
you know. Yeah, you're like, so okay, fine. You took some profits and you could have made more. You could have done, could have, whatever. That's the worst thinking. And again, this is an imperfect business. And I think people need to realize that they're never going to get the perfect low or high. You can try, but take some off. I always tell people, if you're making money on the way up, take a little off and you'll sleep a little better. You lock it in. And that's some of the better fund managers I know will do that. They'll do it. Those that are on the clock monthly, they'll trade like nuts through the beginning 10 days of the month, build up some gains, and then stretch it out a bit and, you know, swing a little harder for the fences. And there's a famous fund manager that would do that, based in Stamford, Connecticut, that was notorious for that. And when you have a gain, it's kind of like baseball. If your team has a lead, if you're the manager of the Yankees and they have a 5-0 lead in the fourth inning, you're going to be able to play a lot more aggressively throughout the rest of the game. And that's something that I try to do. I try to book gains myself in the beginning of the month. And sometimes I'll take a little time off at the end of the month if I'm having a great month and settle down a little bit and recharge. So it's
you're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
We were teasing that we're lucky Tommy came with us today, because I think that's one of these months, and especially coming to year end, we're grateful that you didn't hang it up yet. We have a question from Hef, which I think is interesting. Back to Tesla. I know, right? Back to Tesla. Why not short other EV companies that aren't making cars, like LCID?
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. One of the problems is LCID, Lucid, has very high short interest. I'm just going to do my little...
Where do you see that? Where do you see that, Tommy? Is that on the Bloomberg terminal, or where are you seeing? Where
it's
are you
on
getting
Bloomberg,
that?
And I'm a big fan and user of Phil Erlanger's research, which he is the best, and their research is the best for short interest. So I'm just going to look at short interest. I haven't really looked at
And we also have someone, while you're looking at that, Larry's asking about, you mentioned DMARC indicators. Where can retail investors find that?
Retail investors probably can't. I wouldn't recommend getting a Bloomberg terminal. It's super expensive. Mm-hmm. And you can now get it through DMARC.com.
Oh, wow.
I'm not affiliated with DMARC. I'm probably their biggest fan. And I've used the indicators for over 20 years. I talked and conversed with all the DMARC people for many years. I think they do great work, and it takes a while to learn. I do at Hedge Fund Telemetry, my site, I post maybe 40 charts a day that have DMARC indicators. I try to explain what's happening and why, and what it's going to do, and why they don't work, because sometimes they don't work, and what that means. So I'm sort of educational as well as,
which is, well, you are amazing at and very generous with what you know, Tommy. I have to say.
One thing. Lucid. Here's the thing.
The short interest. Yeah.
Okay. It has 8% of the float is short, and that's not terrible. But the problem is it shows the days to cover very low. So Tesla, 3% of the float is short, and the volume is still high there. So the short interest ratio is like 1 day to cover on Tesla. And so I'm Rivian and some of these others, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't like to necessarily short new issues as well.
Yeah.
Sometimes I like to see the stock, mature for a while, go through an earnings or two. They only have positive things that are going to come out. I mean, positive things like releasing and selling a car. But and Tesla
crazy
has
things
a lot
like
of
that. Crazy things well. For a car company.
Yeah. I mean, I was a big believer and I talked a lot about Ford, and I think Ford's great. I'd love to buy Ford again on a dip, and it is dipping a bit. Back over 20. I'd like to buy it in the mid teens if possible. And that's entirely possible in 2022. They have great products, and I think it's great. And the other thing with Tesla is that the valuation is just nuts. I mean, yeah, Lucid, Rivian, those make no sense as well. But again, those are too new. They have too many people trying to bet against them, and it's a day trader's heaven. And I'll just stick to Tesla. I think it's and the CEO selling tons of stock. Hey,
yeah,
what do you know?
But we're almost out of time, but I do want to ask you, so we're coming out the Fed meeting tomorrow. You mentioned some of the shorts that you're liking, but relative to coming out of the, positioning with the Fed meeting, what should people, or what are you doing and what do you think's wise here? Given that we could see some volatility if something unexpected happens.
I covered some things today.
So you're playing it safe.
Yeah, I still have, I have a large cannabis long holding, and that doesn't matter. I've been saying that's a 2022 theme on the long side, and I bought it pretty good. It didn't,
because it's
good.
Getting, it's been, have you, is that
it's
recent? Because
hit.
Cannabis is, Tony Greer was just on saying, he's ready to throw his hands up. I mean, it can't make any sense of it because it's just getting so beat down, that sector.
Yeah, you've got tax loss selling happening as well. Late in the year. So it's, there was supposed to be this Safe Banking Act and it didn't yep. really play out. But as far as the Fed, so everybody expects the Fed to raise the amount on the taper. Goldman has said they're going to double it to $30 billion a month. And Bank of America said the fund managers survey said by April, the taper will be done. I think that's possible. And if it's, everybody expects a very hawkish Fed tomorrow, but everybody also expects a bounce in the market. And I just am not quite sure that can happen. It might, and I'm sort of positioned mentally for it. And if it happens, I probably will buy some. But it's always that, then what? Towards the end of the year, mm-hmm. What's going to propel it? What's going to really move things more than that? When people start to realize the Fed is tapering more, it's not, Jay Powell will say it's not tightening, but in many respects it is. Then I want to watch the bond market, because if rates start to move higher, that's going to be something that's going to hurt tech, and that could, put a pause on everything. So it's going to be in the next week, we're going to know. But I don't think you need to be a hero and you say, I'm going to go out and buy, calls on the SPY out of the money. I just don't think you need to do that right now. They may work, but I just don't think the risk reward is great, because if it doesn't work and that those people don't get the bounce they want, we're at levels that we could just, the bottom can fall out. And then what? I just don't see a lot of liquidity in the market right now for the people to hold on through the end of the year.
Some fantastic advice. And yeah, it feels a little different this year end, for sure. Tommy, thank you so much for being with us. And thanks to all of you for watching. Hopefully we get a chance to talk, but if we don't before the end of the year, Tommy, have a fantastic holiday. And
you
we are going to look forward
and everybody.
And we're going to look forward to seeing your 2022 from that little notebook. We want to know your thoughts.
Get that done.
Absolutely. Get on it. In the meantime, Alfonso Pacatiello. Alf is back. He's going to be here tomorrow with Darius Dale, which should be a great conversation. In the meantime, take care and good luck out there.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.